9:00, and I open up an informational hearing on issues concerning the deaf and hard of hearing. So thank you all for coming today. And we have George Scheller, Margie Morgan, and Robert Pope.
Yes.
Okay. Good morning, members of the House Human Rights Committee. My name is George Scheller, and I live in Albany, Oregon. I'm here to testify as a representative of the Oregon Association of the Deaf. According to your agenda, you are seeking information on deaf and hard of hearing issues. I consider myself as being deaf, so my remarks will deal with the deaf population issues and not the hard of hearing issues. I do not really know what all the issues are with hard of hearing. Hearing Loss Association of Oregon is more qualified on the issues with hard of hearing individuals, but I'm sure their issues are no different than our deaf issues. You may look at me and think I am not deaf. I am not a typical deaf person, only because I can speak well. And you can see I use a hearing aid. I can speak well because I lost my hearing at the age of 12 at a time when all my language and speech had already fully developed. I am using a hearing aid only to help me hear sounds around me and to help me control the tone of my voice. You can stand behind or beside me and talk yourself blue in the face, and I will not understand a word you are saying. I would guess that 80% of the deaf individuals in Oregon only have a third or fourth grade reading writing level. Because of this, most deaf individuals do not usually speak out on issues that affect their everyday lives. The present deaf children in the education system are mostly multi-handicapped children due to the drugs their parents use and will need support service once they leave the educational system. Now let's look at the term hearing loss. Hearing impairment is an insult to us. Don't use it. There has never been a line drawn between what is deaf and what is hard of hearing. Each individual is different depending on when the hearing loss occurred in one's life. What is hearing loss? It is a communication issue, plain and simple. Most deaf people communicate in American Sign Language, not spoken English. If a member of this committee at your age was to lose your hearing overnight, you would be thrown into a very different world where you could not communicate. Your emotional state of mind would overwhelm you, or even to do your job, or earn a living, to support yourself or your family. And there are no services, local or state, but that out there to help you. Now let's look at the issues of service to people with hearing loss in the state of Oregon. We have the Office of Deaf and Hard of Hearing Service in DHS. This office is supposed to only serve state agencies and not the general population. It is a federally mandated program. This office is supposed to have at least 4 individuals in it: a director, a trainer, interpreter, coordinator, and a secretary. At this time, they only have an interpreter, coordinator, and a part-time secretary. The purpose of this office is to train and educate state agencies on the ADA laws and hearing loss issues. At this time, the office has an advisory committee, but DHS has been blocking the committee from meeting. This is the only state program in Oregon. Because this office has no trainer, there are a lot of state agencies that are not following the ADA laws, which in turn can cause a lawsuit against the state of Oregon. The state mental health programs, due to the state hospital federal lawsuit, which resulted in that agency finally hiring an individual who specializes in hearing loss issues. All are all in violation of AED laws. The state prison system is also in violation of the AED laws. I can only guess that many of the DHS and other states were also probably in violation of the ADA laws. As for local programs, the Connection Program under Northwest Human Service here in Salem recently made some changes to the Connection Program, which caused the mental health counselor to resign from the program, so now that program only has a case manager and no counselor. Now residents of Marion Polk and a few other counties do not have a mental health counselor in this program. And as of today, I do not know if they are planning to hire another person. There are only two licensed deaf mental health counselors in Oregon that I know of. There was a program in Eugene where the county mental health, vocational rehab, and independent living programs together funded an office that serves the hearing loss population in that city. This office recently hired a new director, and she decided this office was not needed and let all the staff go. Though there are no local or state programs anywhere in Oregon that currently serve people with significant hearing loss, Portland, with the largest population of individuals with hearing loss, has never had any program that serves this population. Another issue that is now coming to light is the educational issue. Mainstreaming children with a significant hearing loss. To understand this issue would take up a lot of your time, but in a nutshell, these mainstreaming programs are turning out a lot of individuals with emotional problems and no service for them in their communities or in the state. In many cases, they are also causing the state of Oregon and the federal government to support them for a lifetime. They will never be taxpayers. These students may learn some academic skills, but don't have role models, self-esteem, a sense of belonging, and normal social-emotional development opportunities, which, in the end, often results in deliberating depression and anger. The social delay and emotional turmoil often becomes a barrier to success in the work environment and in the community. This now brings me to the issue of House Bill 2053, the establishment of the Oregon Deaf and Hard of Hearing Commission. Almost every state in the United States has a commission for the deaf and hard of hearing. The Commission for the Blind has been in Oregon for many years, and this commission has taken care of all the issues that face the blind population in Oregon. The Blind Commission has been able to educate state agencies and other businesses to make all their programs accessible to the blind. If we can get the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing set up, this commission would work with all the state agencies and businesses to make all their service comply with the ADA laws and to educate them on the issues that people with hearing loss face. Yes, it will cost a lot, but in the long run, you will have better citizens and taxpayers. One issue I have with setting up this commission is that I do not want it under DHS. Past history would tell you that this will not work. The first deaf and hard of hearing office was under the Oregon Disability Commission. We got out from under that commission when we found out that they were using 70% of our funds to run their commission. As you can see from above, we have moved under DHS, which is the state's largest agency, and all their promises to support and help this program went right to the fore. I have been a member of the advisory committee of Oregon Deaf and Hard of Hearing Service since we moved to DHS, and not once have I been able to get a financial report from DHS. I guess this is enough at this time, and I will answer any questions you have on the issues of service to the deaf and hard of hearing population in Oregon.
Thank you very much. Any questions of this gentleman? Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe I missed it, but what department do you recommend that the commission should be under?
The Blind Commission is an independent agency. It's not under any department of any state. And I would like to also see our commission under that, too. I think presently all commissions in Oregon are under the governor's advocacy office or something like that. But that office is under DHS, too. DHS is such a large agency, and we're such a little group that we get lost in that agency. When I ask them for budget reports, things like that, they're always saying, we don't know, we don't know, we don't know where to find it. I mean, I don't want to go back under them again. No.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, may I just address that to Representative Huffman? I said, 2 years ago, we dealt with this. It was Senator Lori Montes Anderson. Was interested in separating and having the deaf and hard of hearing commission. And, you know, knowing George, we met, and this is where we were at with House Bill 2053 at this time, to try to, again, to separate that and have their own commission. So this is tough times right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's the right idea to do.
Representative Maurer and then Representative Boone.
Two questions, Madam Chair. First is, how many deaf people are there in the state of Oregon?
Let me see what I got something here somewhere. I think they usually use the federal standards of 1% of the population is what they usually use. There has never been a census taken of actual how many people there are that are deaf or hard of hearing. And another thing that is hard with that is you can't draw the line between who is deaf and who is hard of hearing. If you want to take the total population of hearing loss as a total, they figure it's 1% of the population. Because people are living longer now, I think that percentage would be going up because there are a lot of older people who join the hard of hearing groups now because of hearing loss due to aging.
Thanks, Madam Chair. It's a different issue. On the back side of your testimony, you talk about educational issues and mainstreaming of children. And there is a term in the realm of mainstreaming, and it is least restrictive environment.
Yep.
The school for the Oregon School for the Deaf sometimes is considered, quote, an institution. And sitting through the hearings for the School for the Blind, it was brought to our attention that many of the parents and participants in that program consider that not a restrictive environment, in fact, the least restrictive environment for them. Do you consider that the School for the Deaf kind of falls into that same category for many people?
Okay, if you are blind, you can hear everything around you. Now, you look at the process of learning. You start at the day you're born. You hear the sounds around you all the time. You go into a restaurant to have a meal, and you are listening to people talking to you around you, and you are picking up little bits of information all the time. Now, if I was to be in the same situation as you, being deaf, I wouldn't do that. All of my learning is visual. So, in order to get an education, my education would have to be on a 16-hour daily basis. I have to sleep 8 hours. So 16 hours of that has to be visual learning. Mainstreaming programs the child is only getting 7 hours of school supports a day, 5 hours. The law does not require any support after school hours. In today's society, both parents usually work. And I think you will find in research that most deaf kids come from single-parent families. The parents don't have time to actually put their attention into that kid, especially if they have other children in the family, you know. So this child isn't actually in a 16-hour environment. Now, in the deaf school, they are. They're in a 16-hour environment there. So they are actually learning 16 hours a day. Education isn't only just learning ABCs and other requirements. It also, you have to learn social skills, teamwork, and all these other things. And you don't get that if you're in a mainstreaming program. So there's a difference there. And I'm chairman of the board for Camp Tololi, which is a camp for deaf children up on the North Saniam River outside of Staten. And every summer we get a lot of these kids from mainstreaming programs. You can see right off all the emotions they have and no teamwork skills. It's hard to work with them because of their emotions. And if you don't have a way to deal with that as you're growing up, when you get to be adult, what do you have? A person that needs a lot of services, especially counseling and behavior modifications, maybe things like that. But there's nothing out there to help them.
Thank you. Representative Boone.
Thank you. I just was wondering what the budget is, and was this commission joined with the Blind Commission before?
No, the Blind Commission has never been part of the Deaf. I can't see how you can put deaf and blind together. You've got a communication issue there now.
You've been talking about that, so I asked that.
Any other questions? Representative,
well, I didn't get an answer about the budget.
Going to follow up on that.
Okay.
Yeah. Madam Chair, if I could just maybe clarify the budget part a bit. If we have a budget for the Commission for the Deaf, then is there a funding problem?
DHS who maybe can answer that question.
So Patty can remember that question. So, you know, why would there be a problem separating it?
No, he doesn't.
Maybe
know.
One of those things sure. can't be answered today.
Right, we'll try to find the answers maybe from another. And we do have several other people who are wanting to testify. Thank you, Mr. Scheller.
Thank you, committee. My name is Margie Morgan, and I'm the president of the Oregon Association for the Deaf. I'm a resident of Oregon. I love Oregon still. I never get tired of the state of Oregon. I love it. I was born deaf. I can speak just simple words. Okay? Now, OAD, the Oregon Association for the Deaf, is a nonprofit organization since 1921, and our goal is, our mission is that the Oregon deaf and hard of hearing people are valued. Their value of mutual assistance and cooperation in matters essential to our general welfare and its mission to promote, protect, and preserve the civil rights and to advocate to enhance the quality of life for deaf and hard of hearing individuals. And there is evidence that deaf individuals are screaming for our help. We need a certified deaf interpreter who would be an ASL professional. For example, a few weeks ago, there was a deaf man who called me and said, I need help. I'm very frustrated with my counselor and the interpreter I have. And I said, what do you mean? He said that the person, the deaf man himself, was a low-level functioning person in his language. And so he had to keep asking the ASL interpreter to repeat things. And the counselor became angry and frustrated. And the counselor said, what's wrong with that deaf man who doesn't understand us? So we have to educate them so that they can provide a certified deaf interpreter. And that means that's a deaf person who has skills to communicate with somebody who has a lower language level. And then they can clarify things so that the deaf person can understand what the hearing counselor is saying. We only have one certified deaf interpreter in the entire state of Oregon, and he lives out in the East. You know, in the East, there are a lot of people who are certified deaf interpreters, and so they're able to be provided to help counselors and deaf people communicate so everything is understood clearly. Businesses and professionals do not always follow ADA laws, and especially in assisting low-level functioning deaf people in their language who are not able to read and write legal letters. They don't know quite how to vote. They need clarification so that deaf people can understand, because they would like to learn more about how to vote in Oregon. There's a high percentage of deaf people who collect SSI. And the reason why is people that are mainstreamed, and then after they graduate, everyone tells them, oh, just sign up for SSI. It's easy. You just collect the money every month. You know, and but they're not paying the taxes, but more of them are collecting SSI. And then deaf prisoners have very poor American Sign Language communication with policemen, guards in the prison, and everything. It's very much a problem. It's an issue. In Oregon, they have no deaf and hard of hearing services. Other states have wonderful services out there. We need professionals for mental health, voc rehab, and so they can communicate with deaf customers. Also, for marriage counseling, drug and alcohol, and other issues. It'd be great to have professionals who could sign an ASL themselves and communicate with their clients. Deaf people would really like to communicate directly without an ASL interpreter in the middle between them and a professional counselor, because they would like to have their right to privacy. You know, if you had marriage problems and you had to go see a marriage counselor, you know, you'd go in. But then if we found out that the counselor spoke French and they'd have to hire a French interpreter to interpret for you into English, how do you know the interpreter is interpreting correctly? Do you feel comfortable? If you're having marriage problems, and I wouldn't want, maybe you would feel uncomfortable, you wouldn't want the interpreter to know about your problems, so you just keep everything very superficial. I was the Oregon Deaf and Hard of Hearing Advocate for many years, and I was very disappointed with DHS. And they didn't do well with the ODHHS. And they don't know about deaf and hard of hearing culture and needs. And they failed to answer our questions. And late last fall, they decided to just stop the service so quickly without the Advocacy Council even knowing. That's disgusting. I'm also involved with the Senior Disability Commission for a while. It was just, they were kind of lackluster about their motivation for helping. There are a lot of different disability issues that they deal with, but not much with the deaf and hard of hearing. And I'm concerned that the Commission on Disabilities doesn't have time to advocate for deaf and hard of hearing people. It's just too general. There are too many different types of disabilities they're dealing with, and the deaf and hard of hearing really need help, because a lot of disabled people, they can speak, they can hear. And the deaf community is just so limited in their communication, and education is limited, their rights are limited, they're frustrated. I would like the Commission for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing to be independent, to be separate. And then we could work closely with the Deaf and Hard of Hearing community and agencies to service the state of Oregon. You see, the Commission for the Blind has been independent for more than 50 years. And they're doing well, working with blind people. It's wonderful, but not us. Thank you for listening to our testimony.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Any questions of this witness? Thank you very much for your great testimony. And now I believe we have Robert Pope.
I have something to say that's a little bit off the point. First, I'd like to thank all of the members of this committee for listening to our testimony. I don't fully identify myself as deaf or hard of hearing. You know, when I talk about how I became deaf, sorry, we need two interpreters. When I was sick, I became sick with TB and meningitis. I was in the hospital for 2.5 years. When I got out, I was deaf. At that time, the doctor and the principal and people, it taught my parents, and they forced me to function as a hard of hearing person because of my speech development and because of some of my hearing. And I can talk, but I'm not, because you think that I'm hard of hearing like him, and I'm not hard of hearing. I am deaf. I don't like to identify myself as a hard of hearing person when I am not hard of hearing. I would like to speak to the issues of advocacy for the deaf and hard of hearing in Oregon. I myself live in Salem. I was the final chairperson on the old Oregon's Disabilities Commission. I was the last person to be involved. And he bawled me out, but I was still the chairperson. I was also the chair in the old Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services Commission, the Advisory Commission, the committee. There were a lot of conflicts, a lot of disagreements about the funding issues. And I'm again a member of the new Oregon Disabilities Commission. There's a serious need for advocacy and training for the deaf and hard of hearing all across every department in Oregon. One reason why there was a decision to put ODHHS under the management of the DHS is it was the largest department with the most money. There are many other departments that lack the formal services and knowledge of the deaf. For example, the Department of Prisons, the Office of Mental Health, or Mental Health and Addiction Services. We also need training for airports, trains, buses, and schools. It makes more sense. Every state has a Department of Public Services that supports the ODHHS or the Deaf Commission.
not just DHS. Fortunately, in the last 2 years, the Oregon Department of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing did, unfortunately, they did not have a manager for 1 year, and DHS did not have a trainer. So they're not providing the basic services that we need, and the legislature gave the Oregon Department of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing the authority to do that. My experience as the member of the advisory committee to the Oregon Department of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing is that the committee did not actually have the authority to demand training, to correct the wrongs and bad habits, and really give advice. Advice that could be accepted and not denied. We just didn't have the authority. I believe the Oregon Department of the Deaf and Hard of Hearing, they need the support to have a manager, a trainer, that the legislature gave them the authority to have a long time ago. To be strong, we need the resources to be built up again. I know it's hard at this time, but the Deaf and Hard of Hearing in Oregon is one of the most important populations in the community here, and they need your support. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Bob, when you say trainer, what do you mean by trainer?
We had one manager who was a trainer, and he would go out to different DHS departments, and he would teach them how to work with the deaf and about ADA laws, and teach them some signs. You know, it wasn't perfect ASL, but some signs, you know, how to meet a deaf client when they come in and things like that.
Great. Thank you. Any further questions of this? Representative Maurer, it looks like he's...
Yeah, thanks, Madam Chair. What is... let me start over. The Commission for the Blind was stated, and this is for the panel, was stated to be successful, but Commission for the Deaf has not been. What is the core, what is the reason you believe that the deaf community is not successful?
It's communication.
Thank you. That's what I thought, but I...
Another answer to that is, as you know, every program in this state, whether that is for the deaf, is controlled by a hearing person, not a deaf person who knows what needs to be done. That's been the problem for many, many years.
No. No, hearing people who think they know what needs to be done, but
okay,
they don't
you
really know.
Me
that's
that.
True.
In all the years I've been involved with deaf in this state, a lot of times hearing people who control programs will make decision without asking first if that is what we want, or is that what we need, or is this the way we should be doing it. And I don't know if that's the way the human mind works, or is that the way they were trained, or what, I don't know. But for so many years, because most programs are controlled by hearing people, the deaf have been felt pressured down, you know. And they don't speak out because of all those years of suppression, you know. I will go to a lot of the deaf events, and a lot of these people will complain about this, complain about that, and I'll say, why complain to me about it? Go complain to the legislators, or go complain to the people in charge of the program. Well, I don't know. My language isn't that good. I don't know how to speak that well. I'm afraid they won't understand me. I says, I don't care about that. I don't think people like you even care about language, whether it's perfect or what. You just want the facts. That's all you have to do. You complain to me, complain to you the same way. But because they've been pressed down for so many years, they don't speak out. And like I said, hearing loss is a communications thing. Today is the communication age. And you've got all kinds of technologies now. The deaf don't have all that. We can use some of that technology, but not all of it, you know. So when you look like you said something about the blind commission working, deaf commission working, the blind commission's been, what, here in Oregon for, what, 20 years, 50 years? I don't know how long. Oregon's never had a commission for the deaf. So how do you know if it will be successful or not? But you look at all the other commissions in all the other states in the United States, they've been very successful. That's why a lot of states have better service than Oregon does. And when people ask me, why is Oregon so far behind? I says, well, we're still in the Indian and cowboy age, I guess.
Representative Boone, you have a question.
I was interested in how many people in the correction system are deaf.
Okay, I don't know for sure. That's hard information to get. I've had several meetings with Max Williams on this issue. And when I first approached Max on this issue of a lawsuit against the state of Oregon because of the way inmates were treated, Max decided to get his policy people together and go through all their policies and rewrite them to meet the ADA laws. I also asked Max to send his people up to the state of Washington. The state of Washington, all prisoners are in one location, so that all the staff and all the people there are all communicating on the same level and everything. Here in Oregon, they're scattered around what we have, 9-12 different prisons, you know. Now you take like the prison Snake River in Ontario. If they need an interpreter, they have to get them out of Boise, Idaho, because there's no interpreters around in Ontario, such a small town. And the reason they were in violation there is because they would use other inmates as interpreters, which is against the law, against the ethics of any interpreter group, whether it's a foreign language interpreter or whatnot. Also, the prison system has TTYs, which are obsolete things now. Most of the deaf are using video phones now. So I finally convinced Max to look into that. And he has a person who is, I think this month, is supposed to be working with one of the video companies to see how it will fit in with the state system. My immediate goal is to get all of the prisoners into one location, hopefully. The state of Oregon can save a lot of money. Most of these deaf are in the prison system because they broke the law, yes. But most of them have mental problems. When the court deals with them, the court says, well, this person's deaf, he has mental problems, he don't meet the state hospital requirements. So where do we put him? They just throw him into a prison. That's the only place they can put him. But the prisons aren't geared to deal with mental health issues and deafness. They're not there. If we can get all of them into one location so that the staff and all the people get training, the state of Oregon save a lot of money. And probably those deaf individuals can get service. Recently, I got a letter from an inmate in Ontario. He says he wants to take an automotive classes, which is offered over there. But they said, no, he can't because his medical record says he's deaf. That's a violation. I mean, just because a person can't hear doesn't mean he can't take an automotive class. If all the other inmates have access to all these other educational programs, why can't the deaf have equal access to it? Now, there's a lot of things that are going on that you probably aren't even aware of. I mean, it's a lot of things, and this is why I feel a commission for the deaf can succeed in the state of Oregon.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And now we, unless you've got a quick question here, we have a couple more people to hear from. Bob, Brad Houck.
If I could say one more thing, the state of Oregon, as it is now, a lot of deaf people are on their own. You know, they're very, very isolated. Right now, there's one nursing home for deaf and hard of hearing people up in Gresham called Chestnut Lane. Otherwise, senior citizens who are deaf and hard of hearing are very isolated. They might maybe the only one residing at a particular home. They may be left alone largely because nobody can talk to them. And some of them can't afford to be able to go up to Chestnut Lane. So a commission for the deaf and hard of hearing would be able to get to work trying to address issues like this, helping to encourage people, educating them first that there is a place such as Chestnut Lane, and then also working to get them moved up there, if possible, where they can bloom again. And that would be one goal that a commission would have, and working with the deaf and hard of hearing senior citizens in the state. And I think, you know, I just asked for the chance to try it. I think, you know, in 5 years, a commission for the deaf and hard of hearing could show that we could be just as successful as the commission for the blind is. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you all very much.
I have a question.
So Representative Van Orman.
Yes. My question is about the associations. George, you refer to Hearing Loss Association. Is that the same as the Oregon Association of the Deaf?
No. Oregon Association for the Deaf, most of our members know American Sign Language, and we normally grew up with the hearing loss.
Okay.
The Hearing Loss Association of Oregon mainly are people who don't know American Sign Language. Some of them do. But they are mainly people who lost their hearing later in life when they were 50, 60, and 70s. You know, they're mostly senior citizens, are a lot of them. They would know more about hearing loss issues. I can give you an example. I was asked to go to a Lions Club meeting down in a little town south of Corvallis, and because my interpreter didn't show up, all those members were senior citizens, and most of them were using hearing aids. And I was there to tell them about the camp. But when I got through, I says, well, since I have no interpreter, if you have any questions, write it on a piece of paper and give it to me, and I'll answer them. I got 4 pieces of paper. Every one of them wanted to know how can they use the telephone now that they can't hear very well anymore. It's simple. The state of Oregon provides what they call CapTel telephones free of charge to loan to senior citizens to use. But the information has never got to them, you see. And so it's that's a difference there. There's a difference, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, we're going to move on because some people will be leaving our committee, and I want to make sure everybody gets to be heard. Brad Houck, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And Patty O'Sullivan, and is there anyone else who wishes to speak on this?
John, in the back.
Okay, John and Patty, then after this gentleman. We have a couple of members who have another commitment. They will be leaving, but the rest of us will be here to hear your testimony. Go ahead.
Well, I kept the tape all to myself.
Yes.
How much time do I have?
Well, you've got as much time as you need, but I may cut you off if you go on too long.
Right. Well, I'll try to keep my comments short and brief, okay? Because they've already mentioned a lot of things that have already been said, and I'll just add a few more. My name is Brad Houck, and I'm a licensed clinical social worker. I became licensed last year, and as far as I know, I'm the only licensed social worker in the state, and I work deaf social worker in the state, And we have another clinical psychologist. His name is Dr. Brian Hardiman. He's also deaf. I became deaf when I was 5 years old. And that's when I began learning sign language. And I've been signing all my life. I grew up in a mainstream school environment. I never went to a deaf school. But I had interpreters in all my classes throughout my education. And that access to education and interpreters was very important to me. As some people have mentioned already, deafness is an isolating and oppressive disability. The deaf population is often underserved and overlooked. It doesn't mean that we're doomed to a life of despair, you know. I've had a happy, fulfilling life, largely because of my deafness. And deaf people are the only disability that has their culture. Deaf people, blind people don't have a culture. People in wheelchairs don't have a culture. But people who sign, people who share a language, a way of life, who communicate with each other and share events, are then as a part of a culture of deaf people. And that's a very powerful element. But it's also very difficult because many hearing people don't understand that. They're not a part of that culture. There are a lot of barriers between the two groups of people, between hearing and deaf people. And I think Maurer, you asked about the number of deaf people, and according to my research, the general consensus is about 9% of all the deaf and hard of hearing people. So you have a smaller percentage who sign primarily. It's their native language. And many of them come from parents and families who don't sign with them. So they don't have that social upbringing of communication, access to how the world works, how things are done, except through the deaf school. But it begins in the home. That's what I believe. It begins with a family. We can't just depend on other people to raise the children for us, even though it takes a village to raise a child. You know, but it begins at home. And there's a higher risk for mental health illnesses, mental illnesses, and drug abuse. My experience is where I got my master's degree in social work at the University of Utah. Then I moved to North Carolina. That's where I began working as a deaf coordinator for substance abuse services. I didn't know anything about substance abuse before I started my job there. And I worked there for 5 years and I loved it. And many of the deaf people have access issues to groups, you know, like AA or NA groups. They can't follow what's going on. Group is the primary basis for our treatment. And then I moved here to Oregon, and we have fewer resources than North Carolina provided. North Carolina had a system, a structure of services that covered the entire state. Because of a lawsuit in North Carolina back in 1992, they had to set up a structure of regional services, and each region had 3 professionals focused on the deaf population to cover their mental health, their needs. One was an adult mental health, the other was a child mental health, and the other was substance abuse services. And so they covered, some specialists covered 10 counties, others 15, others 7, depending on the population. I covered Charlotte, North Carolina. That was the highest concentration of deaf people in the state. And I would like the National Association for the Deaf has recommended that type of model for other states across the country. And I'm working with DHS to set up a similar kind of model. I envision probably 5 regions would suffice to cover the state of Oregon. And being the only licensed counselor, I work here in Salem, not even mentioning Portland, Oregon, which has greater needs for services there, as well as what George has already mentioned, the Department of Corrections. In North Carolina, I was given access to the jails and the prison there to meet with inmates, and many of them have mental health needs. So basically, you know, I think you get the point that services are extremely lacking here in Oregon, and given the economy, I don't know how we're going to be able to cover these services, but I feel it's an extremely important group of people, a population that needs to have their services addressed and met somehow by the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Huffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Houck, what agency do you work with here in Salem?
Well, I used to work with the Northwest Human Services. That's a nonprofit organization here in Salem. But I resigned, and I set up my own private practice. And it's called the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Counseling Services here in Salem.
Thank you.
Did you present this material to us?
Yes, I did.
Great. That's excellent material. Thank you.
Very interesting.
Yes. Representative.
Well, I hope it's very informative.
It is.
Yes. Madam Chair, do we have other
written material?
No, testifiers?
Yes, we've got Patty O'Sullivan and John Mullins.
Okay. Then this is the appropriate question.
Yes.
Talk to me about the use of technologies and availability of technologies that are assistive to deaf people. An example was the use, and this was an autistic person, but she had an iPod, you know, which is a $200 piece of equipment that's widely available that, quite frankly, allowed her to communicate. So the question, what other devices are out there and how is technology helping the deaf community?
Okay, well, first of all, we have pagers. We have, I use this just like myself, but I use text messaging. I am instant messaging. We have video phones. I'm sure you're aware of what those are, I don't know. But imagine, I'm sure you've seen Star Trek. Captains talking from one ship to another across space. Exactly the same thing. We see each other on our monitors, on our computer screens, on our TVs. So we see each other in sign language. And that's a very effective tool. That's why the TTYs are becoming outdated, because video phones are replacing that. I have a video phone in my office. My hope is that I'm able to assess and counsel deaf and hard of hearing people through my video phone across the state. That saves a lot of time in terms of travel, time, and so forth. And there are pros and cons related to that. George also mentioned there's a CapTel for hard of hearing people, for people who speak audibly, intelligibly. And the CapTel allows hard of hearing people to read what other people are saying and be able to speak themselves so other people can hear them. And also for hard of hearing people, there are amplifiers on the phone to help them to hear. So it really depends on what that person needs. But there's technology available to suit their needs and their communication abilities.
Any further questions? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Houck, you mentioned that you're working with Department of Human Services now, and I was just wondering exactly what you're hoping to do with them.
Well, we're trying. Hopefully we can set up a model of mental health services across the state at the state level, psychiatric needs for the hospital, in hospitals, and the community level. To be able to set up a broad coverage of services. Basically, that's what we're looking at right now. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Representative Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I found the comment about working with people suffering from addictions and their challenges in being part of AA or NA very interesting. It was a thought that I'd not really pursued before. A second thought that I'm beginning to develop is something that maybe we could talk about at a later time, but there was a reference made to elderly individuals, and certainly hearing loss is a very common occurrence with aging. But those individuals are not going to be people who have grown up knowing sign. So we need to put more thought around how we're going to be better able to communicate with elderly individuals and their hearing losses. So probably today won't allow time for it, but I'd be very interested because that's an area that I work in a lot, having some further conversation about that at some time.
Well, no, I've had several clients who don't know how to sign and who are late deafened, and it's a challenge. I spend my entire session with them just typing back and forth on the computer, and it's time-consuming and very challenging, but we have a lot of patience, you know, we have to. And you're right, in terms of substance abuse services, we try to be creative to figure out ways to meet their needs, and it's not easy.
Thank you.
Representative Van Omen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the material...
Oh, watch, wait a minute.
Oh, okay, George, just reminding me, thank you, that Oregon has to pay the state of Washington for our drug and alcohol services, because we don't provide that here. We have a Northwest Drug Addiction Center stationed in Vancouver, Washington, and Medicaid pays. Well, I don't know how much Medicaid pays for their treatment in Washington. And it's a huge challenge to keep them here in Oregon, to get the services that they need locally near their home. And ongoing outpatient services and treatment needs.
Thank you. Representative Van Orman.
Thank you, Chair Tomei. So my understanding of the presentation today is we're talking about a commission, which it sounds like two associations have the agenda already. And then in Brad's testimony this morning, it's also about mental health and drug and addiction problems services. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, let me clarify. I'm here to support the implementation of a commission, if that is possible, if that could happen. And I don't know what the commission would, what they would, but I know that they would advocate for mental health needs of deaf people. If they would be in charge of that, I don't know. We're working with deaf well, welcome to DHS now, but I'm hoping to, just to educate all of you here today to be more aware of the challenges and the needs of deaf people out there in Oregon.
Thank you, Brad. Thank you very much. I'm going to call up John Mullins and Patty. I think you want to speak last. Come on up.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen. I'm here today as co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon. I just wanted to say a couple of very quick things. Back in the 1980s when I was co-chair the first time around, went through a couple of major discussions with DHS about reorganization. One was the creation of a department for people with disabilities, which got a lot of discussion and there was a lot of interest in it, but in the end, a decision that was led to the formation of Seniors and People with Disabilities. And the reason that I wanted to come up here and quickly testify today is that I think this has been very interesting and compelling testimony. And the Americans with Disabilities Act, which also passed during the 1980s, really is a civil rights issue. And it creates a number of complexities and difficult issues. DHS has done a good job on a number of those issues. Certainly the work that they do with us as the Human Services Coalition, they're very, very good about that. We have very good services from the department. But the complexity of serving people with different kinds of disabilities is a very complex and difficult issue for not only the Department of Human Services, but in for society in general. The reason that I wanted to talk a little bit today was to mention that before you this session, you have some big decisions that are going to be made, including the direction that's taken on either House Bill 2009 version or Senate Bill 856 version of health care reform that has to do with the creation of the Oregon Health Authority, whether it's sooner or later or however that would be rolled out. And I would just submit that there's a need to think about those functions as they're taken apart and how we are going to do our best to serve clients in two different organizations when there are issues about disabilities and other consumer issues to consider. So on a couple of occasions I've been testifying about that issue, and the Human Services Coalition has a statement that they're preparing about that. In other words, we were very interested to see healthcare reform go forward, but we think that there are a number of issues that have to be considered about the creation of two organizations and, most importantly, how consumers will fare in that situation. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Any questions? Thank you so much, and thanks for all the work you do, John. Patty.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Patricia O'Sullivan. I'm the Director of Public Policy and Government Relations for the Department of Human Services. I'm not sure I'm going to have a lot of solutions. I do have some information to give you. And I have to say, Mr. Pope testified in a very forthright and honest way, and he's absolutely right. And I'll get to a couple of the things he said in just a minute. I kind of had to giggle back there because he was right about why we ended up with this program. It's because we have the most money. The history of this commission or this committee, advisory committee, I might not have it all right, but here's my understanding. It started out back in the mid-80s as a sort of a subcommittee of the Oregon Disabilities Council. The Oregon Disabilities Commission was created, and this was one of several subcommittees having to do with various disabilities. Things went on, and the Disabilities Commission was a standalone agency at some point in time, and then became part of DAS. I don't know how that happened. I'm not even sure exactly what year it happened, but it became part of DAS. And the relationships, and this is all hearsay, I don't have any, but the relationships between some of the disabled communities of people became strained. And then somehow we, in 2005, there was a statute created just for the deaf and hard of hearing program. I'll get into that in a minute. So they have their own statute now, and the program at that time, it was decided by somebody that it would come to DHS, and sort of like, okay, where would it go? It was put into seniors and people with disabilities because that sort of made sense. The funding for this program is actually gained in two different ways. There are, and this will make more sense when I tell you what the statute actually says, there are contracts with state agencies, and the amount that they pay is based on, we have no clue what it's based on, but every year there is a contract, every 2 years a new contract is signed with about 9 state agencies, and it sort of makes no sense which state agencies we contract with, and they pay the same amount of money every biennia, but it only adds up to $80,000, the total of all of them. That doesn't even pay for a full FTE. The services that they get for that are sort of hit and miss. It's when they ask, we give services. But when other state agencies ask, they get services for nothing. So that source of funding makes no logical sense to me as a bureaucrat, as a manager. The other source of funding is that DHS historically has sent, prior to it being in DHS, has sent $500,000 to wherever this was housed for the deaf and hard of hearing community. And you heard one of the former testifiers say that there was some confrontation between the Disabilities Council and their group about what was happening to that money. Again, hearsay for me on a personal basis, but our understanding was that it was going to pay administration for some of it to the Disabilities Council, and not so much for that specific group. But when it came to DHS, it obviously came with no money except these contracts, and then DHS is just supposed to pay for it. No logic behind why we paid that much. Don't know, can't find the history on that. It just is. If you add up, it's actually not 4 full-time FTE. It's actually 3 full-time FTE. 2 of the positions are half-time positions. That's the way it came to the director's office last year from SPD. And this is going to make more sense when I kind of explain the statute to you. So SPD decided it didn't quite fit well there. I'm not even sure of why, and it ended up in the director's office, I think to get it more visibility, but I'm not sure that's really working out, frankly. So it came up to us with these positions, a couple of which were not filled at the time. Actually, one was not filled, and that was the manager position. It ended up in the governor's advocacy office, although you have to understand the makeup of the governor's advocacy office is half governor's advocacy office, Naomi Steenson, and she has folks that answer advocacy calls. The other half of Naomi's office has nothing to do with GAO. It's just kind of called that. She has things like alternate formats, discrimination cases. She has the pain commission. She has respite care. So she's got kind of a conglomeration of client services on the other half of her office that are funded separate than the governor's advocacy office and in different ways. So this one came in, and that's really the only place in the director's office we have to put things. So we put it there, and that was a little over a year ago. They've since, in my looking at minutes of meetings, have had 4 meetings. The last meeting was August of 2008. And commission members or committee members started dropping off to the point today where there's only 3 committee members. The committee members are appointed by the director, and I can't tell you exactly why we haven't been able to recruit more. There's supposed to be 12. And the commission on their last meeting in August, I noticed in the minutes, decided to suspend more meetings because it was pretty hard to have meetings with only three commission members. The staff, as far as the manager position, it came to us in the director's office as a very low-level position. And not one I really wanted to lead this program. So it is actually, that manager position is not filled because it's in a reclass package right now. So to fill it at the lower level, we really want to fill it at the higher level and get a higher caliber manager to really do something with this program. Nothing the previous testifier said is untrue, really. We haven't done a very good job with it. I take partial responsibility for that. And it's always, as soon as session's over, I'll do something, but that's kind of the way it is with everything else on my plate that's not my legislative piece of my job. So as time went on, the committee didn't meet, and we do have the manager position in a reclass position. In September, the trainer resigned, and so right now we have two positions filled: the clerical person, who's really only a half-time person, and so the other half of that her time is spent actually in the governor's advocacy office, and then we have the person who helps with the interpreter services. So let me get to the statute. It's 410-740, and it's the Oregon Deaf and Hard of Hearing Services Program Advisory Committee, and an advisory committee. What the statute states here is the purpose of the program is to assist members of the public and state agencies in making agency programs available and accessible to individuals who are deaf and hard of hearing. What that translates into is a state agency calls us and they either want training or they want interpreters. So we have contracts with all kinds of interpreting signing services, Braille to have any agency's products put in Braille. We have those contracts. Agencies call us and ask for our help to do that or ask us to line up interpreters, sign language interpreters, ASL. And that's what that scheduler position does, and that's what the scheduler position is currently doing, and the half-time clerical is helping with that. There's quite a bit of that traffic. Those services are paid for separately. What are $500,000, or actually it's a little less right now because the positions are vacant, but what those people do is all the scheduling, run the contracts, make sure people are complying with the contracts, do the billing, do the collection, et cetera, et cetera. The trainer is, when we had a trainer, did go, as you heard in previous testimony, did go around to state agencies and try to help them understand, you know, when you have, well, they have customers, we have clients. When you have people come into your state agency who are deaf or hard of hearing, how do you handle that? What do you do? And when you start thinking of state agencies, it's really interesting to me when I looked at the list of the agencies we have contracts with. DMV isn't on there. There's a whole bunch of agencies that I could see would have people come in that they would need to serve, and they are customers, and I'm not sure how they handle it. To me, that's what this program should be doing. But let me tell you about the rest of the statute, and I'm going to probably say something that might kind of tick you off, but let me take a chance. The program may also, now this is May, and I see a lot of bills in this economic crunch this year, this session, going through that says when funds are available, and you may. But when you put in law like that, the perception, as you just heard from four different testifiers, is that we will do this. We don't have the money to do the whole line of mays that were put into this statute. And I'm not sure we should do all of them as well. Identification and publicity of the needs and concerns of individuals who are deaf and hard of hearing, advice to us, that's fine. Information, there's C, D, and F are all about employment, helping the deaf and hard of hearing get employment. And to me, that's kind of voc rehab, not, you know, the director's office. These are services. And then there's subsection E of it is really all about advocacy. And, I mean, as you know, we work with a lot of advocacy agencies or associations. And I thought that's what the associations were for the advocacy piece. I mean, I don't think DHS should go over and tell Max Williams how to run his programs or any other agency. We should be helping them if they come to us. And I'll go one step further. I believe they should be coming to us, and I believe they should be picking up their fair share of those services for interpreters, for also the management of that program that helps them get the interpreters. And we should be doing more training with state and local agencies. We've been getting some calls from local agencies on this lately, too. But, you know, again, like any program in DHS, it's nice to help, but we still have to have the funding. This funding, this advisory committee was never appropriated any money. We just do it. And we've been doing it for a long time. So when they say, where's our budget, they don't really have a budget. There's some positions that were assigned, and so we have to pay those people. But it really doesn't come out of any budget. SPD sent the money with the people up to the director's office, and that's just kind of how it is. There really is no specific line item for this issue, as with many in DHS. So now we wonder, well, if it makes no sense, Patio, then what are you doing about it? Well, actually, there were two bills that were dropped this session, the Deaf and Hard of Hearing Commission. But there was also a bill that we ended up not asking for a hearing on. And I developed this bill with some help from the budget manager in SPD. Well, actually, she did the hard work. I just kind of had an idea. And what it would do would be to put put into the DAS price list. You know, DAS charges us for all kinds of things. It's in the price list. It's the stuff we pay DAS for, the services they provide for state agencies. And the price list, and the bill would have put a charge per employee. So if an agency like us has 9,700 employees, we would pay a charge per employee, and so would ODOT, and so would all the boards and commissions. And that would be a service charge that they would just pay. It would roll up in their EBL. They would pay it every biennia, and it would bring in more than it would take to fund those three FTE, so we could ramp up the program. It ended up that the other state agencies in this economic times sort of started grouching about it, and it's really not that much money. And in fact, the nine agencies that currently have contracts, it would have washed out for them. It would have been around the same amount, and other agencies would have started kind of paying their fair share. And they might not think that, but there's very few agencies that don't come across. I mean, there's probably deaf or hard of hearing doctors for the medical examiners board. They probably all have some constituents, consumers, or clients that are deaf or hard of hearing. And they should be asking us for help, and they're not. So hopefully, if we could ramp up the program, we could go out and talk to them and say, what are you doing when somebody comes in, when somebody needs a license and you can't speak to them? What do you do? How do you handle that? Here's how you could handle it. And there is new electronic devices that our folks are looking into. Because remember, not only is it difficult for signing at different levels of education and different levels of whether they can hear, not hear, speak, not speak. But remember, we have people who don't speak English who are deaf. And so finding a signer that can sign in Romanian for some of our clients is sort of a difficult thing to do. But there is some new technology that comes over video that we're starting to look into to help some of those issues. So there was another bill, and I'm not here to tell you how to do this, but I would caution you that some of this, some of the services that are on that list make sense for DHS to do, and some don't. We're not an advocacy organization to start going around to other agencies and you know, requiring them to do something. We can go around and train them and ask them how they handle their clients and people, and we can help them. But there's some other things in here with the employment that I'm not so sure this program should do, but that we should move into VR. I don't know. I mean, I would like the interim to really look into this and to bring back maybe in February, but at least next session, the bill that that we proposed to equally spread the funding around. And I know, I'm sorry that was so long, but if you have
any... That's the most I've ever heard you talk, Patty.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh. If you have any questions, I'd be glad to answer.
Normally it's... No.
A good bill should not pass.
So, Patty, I have two bills, 2125
mm-hmm.
and 2053. So which was it that you had proposed?
2125.
2125, okay.
And it would require DAS to collect the surcharge. They just send it to us because they're the only one that can collect it from all agencies.
Okay. So I would ask this of the two of you. In the Ways and Means sub, we had a hearing, but that was Voc Rehab, wasn't it, when we had people who were deaf and hard of hearing who would come to testify. Yeah.
Chair Tomei, again, I believe these services are needed, and we need more services, but I'm not sure they all belong in one program. And the advocacy piece, we can't let our employees get involved with the advocacy piece.
Right.
And we still have an up-and-running interpreter services piece that we can't forget. We've got to keep that going. And hopefully, if the reclass package goes through, we can get a manager at the level that can start making some decisions. We have Lori Nelson, who actually does a whole bunch of other things for us at this point, is acting manager along with all of her other duties. I did want to also mention that when the trainer resigned in September, remember, we're under a hiring freeze. So.
Quite well taken. Any questions? Rep. Jim Cowan.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We've got to go.
We do have to go, and I'm not posing a question to these folks, but I would be hopeful that during the interim we could bring the agency back and have some further conversation about where things are now and what some thoughts, so that we could do some thinking before next session.
Well, oh, absolutely. That's certainly my intent, and I'm hoping there might be maybe a couple people, and I think Representative Olson has a special interest in this, I think, because of his constituent. Mm-hmm. That maybe we can, Representative Cowan, is that maybe of interest to you to work offline, although you were talking today about what the interim is like for you.
So. I would be interested in focusing a little bit on the senior population needs, not because mm-hmm. I don't appreciate the needs of the broader community, but because that's an area where I have special interest.
Yes, I personally have especially interest. My husband is a senior, as am I, and he is becoming very hard of hearing, and it's a very difficult issue for both of us. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to ask Representative Olson, and if anybody else has any interest in following up on this, what I'd like to suggest is that there be an interim group that would be meeting maybe with some folks from this group who are here and Ms. O'Sullivan who might look into this and further and see what avenue we should take. And it's certainly an issue I would like to work on in the interim. I'm not sure that we'll have anything. I'm not sure we're going to have any money in February. But certainly by the next legislative session, I hope that we have some legislation that would come through that would address this more thoroughly. It seems like this is an issue that really needs a lot of care and help. And
Madam Chair, in this handout challenges and opportunities, not all of the opportunities, I think, cost money. Like some of the opportunities are looking at efficiency and mm-hmm. ways of doing business.
And so maybe
not to say that some don't cost
right.
money.
Right. But maybe, are you saying that maybe we could do something by February?
Madam Chair, I think that's a conversation. I honestly don't know the answer to that, but you know, it's not always about needing an extra dollar.
Right.
It's about way of doing service. And for example, the issue of regionalized services, that crosses over into the education community. We have ESDs who already provide translation services, who deal with this community at the education level, know that they exist, but I'm sure there's not much communication between ESDs and DHS in this situation. But they're positioned, at least they're supposed to be positioned, to deal with that in schools. Well, but these people age out. But that doesn't mean that their services disappear or the need for services disappear.
Yeah. Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Huffman.
I suspect we could get something done by February. It looks like there's money going into a program now. If we could get a working manager and a couple of staffers with communicating and connecting the programs that are out there, I think that would make a huge gain over what's being done now, with probably no additional dollars going into what's being kind of thrown out there.
I guess my thought is that the need is greater than what DHS is prepared to provide.
I think it's kind of like Representative Maurer said, too. I think there are probably a lot of players out there doing something. Mm-hmm. They're not communicating with each other. It's not an organized effort. Where if there was an organized department, even a small department with a working manager, not just a higher-level manager that dictates how the program goes, and with a working commission, I think, you know, a commission that actually has some substance.
Are you willing to work on this? Is that what you're doing?
I'm thinking about it, but I don't want to commit this morning, but I'm not sure the problem is that big.
Well,
we need to go.
We
have four sessions starting in 2 minutes. We will continue this discussion, and we will be working on this on the interim. Thank you all so much for coming. For your willingness to bring this to us, willingness to work with us on this, and we promise you we will be working with you on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. And with that, we're going to close the informational hearing on deaf and hard of hearing and close the House Committee on Human Services.